today by quoting a riddle from a man named Charles Kimball. Who am I? I have no respect for justice. I maim without killing. I break hearts and ruin lives. I am cruel, malicious, and gather strength with age. The more I am quoted, the more I am believed. I flourish at every level of society. My victims are helpless. They cannot protect themselves against me because I have no name and no face. To track me down is virtually impossible. The harder you try, the more elusive I become. I'm nobody's friend. Once I tarnish a reputation, it is never the same. I topple governments, ruin marriages, and divide friendships. I destroy careers and cause heartaches and sleepless nights. I wreck churches and separate Christians. I spawn suspicion, generate grief, and make innocent people cry on their pillows. Even my name hisses. Who am I? Gossip. You can hear that S in there, can't you, with the hiss. I've added a little bit today to this. It said, nowadays I hide under the guise of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, called freedom of speech. Though I can assure you that is not what the original writers ever intended. I also hide under the guise of truth, though gossip can also be true. As there are those who have twisted the meaning of our founding fathers, there are those who have twisted the meaning of our Father in heaven. There is certainly nothing free about gossip, though it is freely spoken. The sum of all gossip is pain, grief, division, and ultimate destruction. A man named Morris Mandel from Bits and Pieces, June 1990, said gossip is the most deadly microbe. It neither has legs nor wings. It is composed entirely of tails, and most of them have stings. Proverbs chapter 18, let's turn over here. So much to be said about this topic, and one for a Christian, and of course, as I'm studying this and going through all of the scriptures on this topic, and you see how serious God takes this, the more I'm asking and telling myself I would never, ever want to do this ever again. All of us have probably fallen into the mistake of gossiping at one time or another. And we've certainly been the recipients of gossip and understand maybe how that really feels when you know that somebody has gossiped about you. Proverbs 18 verse 6 says, a fool's lips enter into contention and his mouth calls for strokes. His mouth calls for beatings, for stripes, for getting somebody back for what they've done, for exacting vengeance. Verse 7 says, a fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost part of the belly. Once again, in examining that, have you ever experienced how that feels? How hurtful that is? Do you know, it's so important, as we've seen scriptures mentioned twice within the scriptures, as we've seen the soul that sins will die repeated again. This is also repeated in Proverbs 26, verse 22. You know, when it's repeated, it's something that it clicks. It's important that we understand this. Not just for something for us to know, but a reminder of how it feels. Because again, if you've experienced how much this feels, why would we want to dish it out? How many have been affected by the pain caused by gossip, or worse, have been an instigator of gossip? The Bible has much to say when dealing with this subject. So let's delve into this topic today and examine ourselves so that we can avoid its deadly venom and trap. Titled today, Gossip, Satan's Ally. Gossip, Satan's Ally. Sometimes we really don't take the sin of gossip as seriously as we should. Now, maybe we can when we understand it better, because it seems like a small sin when compared to others, but it's not a small sin to God Because there is no small sin to God. Romans chapter 1, verse 28. Let's turn over to the New Testament here. Now in Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. Here Paul says that even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, he gave them over to a reprobate, a castaway or rejected mind. As he mentioned in Thessalonians, if we don't consider that Christ is in our life, have we become castaways? The same word, rejected or reprobate. A rejected mind to do those things which are not convenient, that are not fit or appropriate. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, including adultery and fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, or just bad overall character, and this world word called whispers. Whispers. I think we can understand this again because though some gossip may be spoken a little bit louder, many times it's in the form of whispering. This Greek word called sistoristis, meaning when you look at the word, had to look up another word because it says a secret calumniator. Don't know if you ever known a calumniator. A secret calumniator, a whisper, someone who blackens, who slanders, who maligns, who smears, who vilifies. This word called sistoristis, whispers. Pierre de Marivaux said, some people will believe anything if it is just whispered to them. Verse 30 continues, backbiters, or this word called slanders, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affections, implacable or not able to make peace, unmerciful. But you know, you look at these terms that Paul uses, who would ever want to be a part of any of them? These are terms certainly none of us would want to be associated with, and yet sometimes people can say, well, you know, gossip's not that bad, is it? Before God it is when we see the representation or who we can ally with when it comes to gossip, we don't want to come a foot near the thing. Verse 32, it says, who knowing the judgment of God, those who commit such things are worthy of death. Yes, whispering. Not only do the same, but have pleasure in those that do them. You've probably seen some TV shows where you had the community gossiper. The one that would always be the woman maybe that's looking through the window, watching everything that's going on with the community, and then telling everybody else what everybody else is doing. And having pleasure because she is the town gossip. That's what she was known as. So you do have those that have pleasure because, hey, if you want to hear, if you want to know what's going on, talk to this person. And they'll give you the inside scoop on everything that's taking place. Sad part about it nowadays, it's not just within what people say, it's within what people write. Because now you've got something called Facebook and Internet. So now is it not just spoken, but some people can be portrayed, at least portray themselves as the all-knowing. The all-knowing. I'm not afraid to say this. I know someone that you might have seen. It's called the shining light. And this person knows everything about everything that's going on within all the churches. So I renamed him to the blinding light. Because that should not be done. Ever. To be the church gossip on everything that's taking place. So that's all you got to do is go to the site. And he knows everything. He's got certain connections maybe within all of these so-called different groups. So he's the all-knowing. So gossip can come in different forms. But, you know, understanding gossip, if we're going to understand it, let's define it. The Random House College Dictionary defines it as idle talk or a rumor, especially about the personal or private affairs of others. Talking about a person, true or not true, showing them in less than positive light. Now, there are times few and far between when truth about others must be shared with a third party. But we've got to be very careful when those times come and understand who we should go to and not necessarily spread everything to everybody in the entire world or the entire church. There are times, again, that the Bible does point that out, when there are times that the church does need to know about a certain incident. But again, those are very few and far between. You've got that other word that accompanies with it. It's called slander, as we just read in Romans, meaning a bad report. Now, both of these came along with the story and what Joseph did. If we go back to Genesis chapter 37, we'll see how Joseph wasn't exactly put in a bad light by his brothers. That if maybe you had a brother or a sister like this, and maybe you did, that wasn't exactly your favorite brother or sister. I know, being the youngest in my family, my defense on my big brother and sister was, I'm telling mom and dad. And I got a good deal out of that. I learned about bribery. Because if I didn't tell mom or dad, my sister would eat my vegetables. I never liked vegetables when I was a kid. So she'd go, I'll eat your vegetables. I go, you got a deal. And she did. I remember times that she did. She goes, hey, here you go. Scoop them up. So deals are made in small matters like that, but you know that deals are made in larger matters too, that involve entire nations, involve people high up in government. Genesis 37, verse 2, these are the generations of Jacob, Joseph being 17. So here he is, 17 years old. He's feeding the flock with his brother and his family. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpha, his father's wives. And Joseph brought to his father their evil report. I'm telling dad. Boy, that really got him in favor with his brothers, didn't it? So what happens after that? If you read through the chapter, he has a dream. And in the dream, the brothers can easily interpret the dream. They ask him, are you saying that you're going to rule over us? Not only are you going to tell dad, but you're telling us that you're going to rule over us. Then he has another one. He tells his dad, and your dad goes, does this mean that you're saying you're going to rule over me? So Joseph was, at 17, was not filled with the wisdom that comes with later years. And the question is here, did Joseph or does anyone ever get away with sin? Because now telling the dream wasn't a sin, but according to the scriptures, bringing the bad report was. We might take that too lightly. And then you see the story of Joseph, what happened. It almost seems like Joseph got away with more than more than he deserved, although again, with something like this, we deserve death. This is what the Bible says. In Leviticus chapter 19, let's see what God outlined here, and something known as statutes. These would be statutes that had to do with permanent statements that God would make that still exist today. Let's see why. In Leviticus 19, verse 15, it says, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. You think that one should be around today? How about, you shall not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. You treat everybody the same, right? Should that still be around today? It's called a statute. But in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. A specific command. Verse 16 says, you shall not go up and down as a talebearer among your people. Neither shall you stand against the blood of your neighbor. I am the Eternal. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. Stop. Think about this. Remember, we've talked that Christ came to magnify the law. I've said before, he came to re-magnify it. Isn't that magnifying the law here? The commandment called, you shall not murder? It says, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. Were the commandments not magnified under the old covenant? It says, "You shall not in any way rebuke." You shall anywise rebuke your neighbor and allow sin upon him. In other words, there's a time to go to your brother, to talk to him, and not allow. You're to be. Yes, are you your brother's keeper? Yes, you are. And there's a way to do that, according to what the scriptures say. Verse 18, "You shall not avenge, nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am God." That's what he says. I'm the one. These aren't anybody else's rules, he's saying. These are my statutes and my commandments, and you are to obey them. Now, if you look at just the four verses that we read and examine it in light of Genesis 37, who was under an indictment here? All of them were, including Jacob. Is it good, let's ask the fathers here, or the moms, is it good, does it provide for a healthy family to have the favorite child? It's all you can see is pain all the time when that happens. When you can see that someone was favored, somebody else is going to be in trouble, or the favored one is going to be in trouble. This is from Debbie Scales in an article titled, "I Don't Mean to Gossip, But," from Christian Women magazine, September-October 1987. Quote, "This verse brings to mind the picture of a person making her way through the ranks of the already murmuring and unhappy Israelite travelers. As she goes up and down among the people, she whispers the latest news of the camp. She'll say, 'Don't quote me on this, but I've heard that Moses may be on his way out. There are other men, you know, who could just lead as well as Moses anyway. Probably better. And by the way, have you noticed how the Zeriel family is always the first group to gather manna every morning? I probably shouldn't even mention it, but there's no need to be greedy if you ask me. Oh, there are those rambunctious Ashbel boys again. I do wish their parents would control them a little better. I don't like to talk about people, but the way they let those boys behave is just a shame." Ever heard that before in the church? I've had someone ask me one time to do a family of corrective type sermon, and there was only one family that had kids in the church. Thankfully, I was a little bit older to know I don't think that would be a good idea. It's so easy to look at someone else, though. I know one of the first gifts we've got in an associate pastorship that I had was someone gave us a book on how to raise a healthy child. A difficult child. It's a gift, how to raise a difficult child. How are you supposed to take that? I was thinking, was there a book called How to Give Wise Gifts? You know, it's so interesting to look at this as we examine it. We know that we've been surrounded by those that have not spoken very well, including, again, examining ourselves, not just someone else. The New Testament has two interesting words regarding this sin of the tongue. One is called catalalio, and as I pointed the other, sistheristus. Catatalio means a backbiter or a slanderer. A sistheristus is a gossiper or a whisperer. Let's kind of see how we can connect the two here. The difference between gossip and slander is simply one of degrees. Suppose, and that I don't want you to even think about doing this, but just suppose putting a story together that someone wanted to kill somebody. To illustrate the first term, backbiter or slander, Take a gun and walk right up to their face and announce that you're going to shoot them and just shoot them. That's slander. Or you can take the other way, the coward's way of murder. Just take a rifle with a scope, attach a silencer to it, hide yourself a safe distance away, and then kill them from long distance. That's whispering and backbiting. They never knew what hit them. That's sistheristus. A woman named Barbara Katcher from Vital Speeches, March 1987. Quote, "Winston Churchill exemplified integrity and respect in the face of opposition. During his last year in office, he attended an official ceremony. several rows behind him, two gentlemen began whispering. That's Winston Churchill. They say he's getting senile. They say he should step aside and leave the running of the nation to a more dynamic and capable person. When the ceremony was over, Churchill turned to the men and said, Gentlemen, they say he's also dead. From Ellen Cox Wheeler, the they say, you've heard before. Have you heard of the terrible family they and the dreadful venomous things that they say? Why, half the gossip under the sun, when you trace it back, you will find begun in that wretched house of they. You know what they say? Have you heard? Hey, you know what's going on? And the whispering that comes with it. I think we can all identify that. How to avoid the sin of gossip. First point is, understand the devastation. Understand the hurt of this sin. The pain that's caused by it. If you've been hurt by gossip, why would you want to desire to harm someone else? See, even the word devil comes from the Greek word diabolos, which means slander or accuser, and directly refers to Satan. See, speaking critically about someone else is functioning as an ally to the slander, to the accuser. As we know, he's mentioned as an accuser of the brethren in Revelation 12, verse 10. And you can go all the way back to his beginning. If you go back to Ezekiel 28, it says, buy your merchandise. He was the slanderer. He was going around, no doubt, whispering to all the other angels, and a third of them bought it, didn't they? Hey, guess what? I can do it better. You can have something a lot better because he did it with Adam and Eve too, didn't he? He convinced them, but he convinced a third of the angels that they could do better. And we don't know how long that took. But by his merchandise, by going around, and that's where you get the word devil, slander. Understand that it is an evil spirit of pride which broadcasts negative news about others. It's a self-righteous hypocrite who speaks words of destruction. See, such talk not only affects our relationship with others, but more importantly, our relationship with our Father. So understand the pain that this not only causes, but the grief that it's caused. If we truly understand that, we'll ask ourselves, why would I even want to do this? Why would I even want to come close to passing on or to gossiping or slandering someone? Second point is, think about what you are saying before you say it. You've probably heard, or maybe have said. Now, understanding this, I'm definitely will say something now because I've maybe let it slide a couple of times, but you've probably heard it said, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but, you know, I probably shouldn't tell this joke, but what do you think is a good idea? If somebody says that right away, I would say, don't say it. Because I don't know of any time, I can't think of any time where I would say, or I wouldn't say, yeah, you probably shouldn't have said that. It probably shouldn't have come up. Maybe it was a bad joke, and it makes you feel very uncomfortable. So if someone ever says, I probably shouldn't, just repeat back, you probably shouldn't. Think about what you say before you say it. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, let's go to a scripture here. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. The wisdom of Solomon here in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 verse 1 says, keep your foot, or we know it as watch your step. Watch your step, Ecclesiastes 5 verse 1, when you go to the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice to fools. For they don't even consider that they do evil. And thinking about how many times if we can ever remember that we've done this, did we consider that that was a foolish thing to do? Normally it comes after the fact, doesn't it? And as Christians, then the right thing to do is to catch ourselves, which is good. But it should give us that impetus to go, I don't even want to get close to that. I don't want to talk. If I need to talk concerning an issue, I'll go right to the person. Instead of, well, you know about this. Well, you know about that. Something to really consider, and we can help each other with this. Verse 2, it says, be not rash with your mouth, and let not your heart be hasty to utter anything before God, for God is in heaven, and you're upon the earth. As we remember, we went to the scriptures where he said, this is my command, these are my statutes, I am the eternal. So Solomon understands this. He says, he's in heaven, you're upon the earth, he hears everything you're saying. So therefore, it probably be wise to let your words be few. For a dream comes through the multitude of business, a lot of thinking. When your mind's on a lot of things, it's just natural. Your mind's going to connect and you're going to have dreams or thoughts about this. Just like a fool's voice is known by the multitude of words. Fool's voice is known by the multitude of words. I've got something to do with Think Today from a man named Alan Redpath. From his article on a passion for preaching. He said, I once formed a mutual encouragement fellowship at a time of stress in one of my pastorates. The members subscribed to a simple formula applied before speaking of any person or subject that was perhaps controversial. And he used the words THINK, the acronym THINK. So if you want to be helped by that today, just write underneath, THINK. And then we'll fill in those words. T, and some of you know this, you've maybe seen aspects of this before. If you're going to speak about something, the first thing to ask would be T. That would be pretty easy, wouldn't it? Is it true? That's not the only thing, by the way, but is it true? The H, what would the H be? Is it helpful? Does it help? Does it serve to build up? The Bible talks about edifying, doesn't it? Does it edify? Does it help? I, is it inspiring? Does it inspire? You know, we have all got the capability to inspire, especially through the power and help of God's Holy Spirit. N, does this really need to be done? Is it really necessary? Or is it just, am I on the list now of being the all-knowing about everything. Is it necessary? And the K, is it kind? Is there kindness involved here? Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Mr. Redpath continued, he said, if what I am about to say does not pass those tests, I will keep my mouth shut. And he said, and it worked. He found a success in it. So think about what you are saying before you say it. Point two. Point three is let only good things come out. Let only good things come out. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29 is something very encouraging here. Once again, it takes a lot of thought, which is great to do on God's Sabbath day, isn't it? And then we get involved with 6 days, or 7 days, really, because it's here where it starts. But 7 days of practice. We really get a lot of practice with this because we talk a lot. We're in communication a lot. And it should give us pause to think about what we're saying, what someone else is saying. Ephesians 4, verse 29, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace to the hearers. Something profitable to the hearers. And don't grieve the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you are sealed to the day of redemption. And all the attitudes that are with it, Verse 31, bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, evil speaking be put away from me with all malice. Sometimes we're mad about something. We're angry about something. And we just want to spill it out, so we defy that proverb that says, don't do vengeance. You may be angry, but there's a way to deal with this. Verse 32 closes here this thought by saying, and be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, even as for God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. Philippians 4. I know we've seen this, but we'll identify one of these points in Paul's letter to the Philippians. In Philippians 4, verse 6, I love the way that this starts out, because it really is something for us to think about on a daily basis when we've got to face all the different things that we have to do. I wonder how many, I'll ask this, how many here have lost cell phones? Just a couple, a few, okay. It's not a fun thing to lose a cell phone. I think I've lost, mine, I've called it, displaced it twice. Thankfully, I believe I called it and somebody at Kroger's answered it. The other one was at a McDonald's. Three times. Now that I come to think of it. I was renewing my lease and I just left it at the Forest Ridge apartment complex office. And they called me, they said, she knew I was just there. Did you leave your phone here? How did I get the call? It was over my Skype computer. That's how I got it. So three times. So I have to practice being anxious for nothing. That's got a lot of information on those phones and all your phone contacts. And then you've got to go through the entire process. So it might not be that. Maybe all different things that this applies to. So we ask our question, are we being anxious? It says, everything through prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. It says, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will keep your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. So it's saying, if you really do that, if you follow the instruction in verse 6, you'll get the blessing of verse 7. And then he continues, and he says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, as we went for the think process, whatever things are true, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report. Joseph would have thought that one out, he wouldn't have brought the bad one to his dad. If there's any virtue, if there's any praise, think on those things. And those things which you have both learned, received, and heard, and seen, and me do. Once again, here's the blessing by the thinking. And the God of peace will be with you. A little poem here that I'm not sure exactly where this came from. Wouldn't this old world be better if folks we meet would say, I know something good about you, and then treat you that way? Wouldn't it be fine and dandy if each hand clasp, warm and true, carried with this assurance, I know something good about you? Wouldn't life be lots more happy if the good that's in us all were the only thing about us that folks bothered to recall? Wouldn't life be lots more happy if we praise the good we see, for there's a lot of goodness in the worst in you and me? Wouldn't it be nice to practice that fine art of thinking too? You know something good about me, and I know something good about you. Another point here on avoiding gossip is keeping private matters private. It's so easy to talk about personal or private matters of another person. And the Bible speaks of this in Proverbs chapter 11. Proverbs chapter 11. In verse 13. When it comes to somebody's reputation, you know, sometimes even though somebody might have committed a transgression, what happens when they've repented of that? And then you or I go and talk about it to someone else? How do you think God looks upon that? There are going to be times when people have to answer for that. By every word, people will have to answer. They're going to have bones of contention against so many of God's servants. And he's going to go, what are you talking about? Did he do that? Yes. He repented of that long before you even brought up the topic. So to God, it's as far as east is from the west, it's not even there. And we're the talebearers bringing it up. Proverbs 11 verse 13 says, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit conceals the matter. Once again, with the influence of Satan, sometimes humankind has such the need to feel that they're the sources of all information because it makes them feel better or more important. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 19. It says, don't even be around people like that. He that goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, don't meddle with him that flatters with his lips. And the one last one in Proverbs I have here is Proverbs 26, verse 20. Proverbs 26, verse 20. Here it says, where there's no wood, the fire goes out. Very interesting analogy. So where there's no talebearer, the strife goes away, doesn't it? It's just not there anymore. So many interesting things when we put all these words together. Another point is, don't allow gossip to go unchallenged. Here's a real test now. This is a real test. But it can be done. If we really see the need for this, if you see gossip, there is an appropriate way to challenge this. And it doesn't have to be in somebody's face, per se, and it shouldn't be that way. Don't allow it to go unchallenged. There's a couple ways to deal with this. One, you could be constructive and say, how do we help this person? How can we help? There was a time in one of my churches when I heard a group of women talking about someone else, that the daughter had a problem with lice. And they were gathered together there speaking openly of it. And I said, have you considered anything on how to help this person? Or does it just make someone feel good to talk about someone else's daughter? They didn't even consider what they were doing. Because it was so easy to get together when you were a group of people to start doing the chatter about someone else. How can we help this person? Something constructive. Or a more subtle way to just smile and say, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm not really feeling very comfortable about this conversation. Something to think about. See, right there, you may have just helped your brother and sister to consider that what they just said wasn't being considered before they said it. But a nice way of doing it. Or Matthew 18, verse 15, have you gone to this person privately? If there's a problem, have you gone to the person? Probably one of the most violated interpersonal commandments within the scriptures is Matthew 18. And do you know why? It's hard. It's difficult. It's so much easier to talk about with somebody's problem with someone else than to talk about somebody's problem, because that's called having to confront. But I found a solution to this when I was confronted by it, to pray about it. God, help me, number one, to speak the right words. Help me to say it in a way that's constructive and not indicting, or that the person's going to take it to mean I think I'm so much better than them. So please help me to give it, and please help the person to receive it, because when this one hit me between the eyes, I didn't realize I needed to go to my brother until I thought about it. And it was a sin that I saw. I could ask myself, am I my brother's keeper? And the easier thing would be to go, nah, just they got their problems. That's not a Christian with the gift of God's Holy Spirit. Sometimes there is a time, an appropriate time, to go to someone, to talk with them in the spirit, in the right spirit, with the right frame of mind that comes again through that contact with God. Or you could approach it from a concerned. So you've got constructive. How can we help this person? maybe a more subtle type way of or of saying, you know, I'm not really comfortable with this conversation. Or Matthew 18, going directly to the person, or the concerned, do you know if Jim, if Sheila knew we were talking about them like this way, they'd probably be really hurt. If somebody knew that we were, if somebody that was here and they heard about it, they probably wouldn't feel very good about this. So don't allow it to go unchallenged. This is from, it's called Hooray for Yiddish. It's a little snippets that I pulled off the internet. It says here, if you don't say it, they can't repeat it. Yiddish folklore offers a telling tale about gossip makers. One such man had told so many malicious untruths about the local rabbi that, overcome by remorse, he begged the rabbi to forgive him. He said, "And rabbi, tell me how I can make amends." The rabbi sighed. He said, "Take two pillows, go to the public square, and there cut the pillows open, and then wave them in the air. Then come back." The rumor monger quickly went home, got two pillows and a knife, hastened to the square, he cut the pillows open, and he waved them in the air, and he ran back to the rabbi's chambers. He said, I did exactly as you said." "Good," the rabbi smiled. "Now, to realize how much harm is done by gossip, go back to the square and collect all your feathers." That's interesting, isn't it? When something is said, the damage is done. It's hard to get that back. In Psalm chapter 34, let's begin in verse 13. Psalm 34, verse 13. "Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. I think that's a hymn, isn't it? We call that a prison hymn because we probably all know it. Turn thou from evil, do what is good. Seek peace, pursue it earnestly. Upon the just are the eyes of God. His ears are open unto their cry. But the Eternal's face is against those who are evil, doers of wrong, to cut them remembrance from them on the earth. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears, and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart, and saves such as have a contrite spirit." So God's going to, he'll take care of all this. We have to make sure that we're doing the right thing. In chapter 35, just over a chapter here, and in verse 28, David said here, "My tongue will speak of your righteousness and of your praise all the day long." And if our tongues were filled with that, there wouldn't be any room for gossip, would there? If you're thinking about God all the time. Chapter 37, across the page here, verse 30. Chapter 37, verse 30. "The mouth of the righteous speaks wisdom, and his tongue talks of justice." His tongue talks of justice. Whose judgment? Whose justice? This is actually the word called mishpat. Speaking of justice, it's the word mishpat. I brought that here again when it defines the laws of God. It's called mishpat. Judgment or justice. Not ours. Not the way that we would define it, but according to the way God would define it. So once again, sometimes people think that, well, it's true. Does that mean it's right? Does that give us the license? Is that justice? Is that judgment to pass something on? Something to think about when we're talking about these things. All of the sins of the tongue are deadly. Profanity, insults, lying, just being outright negative, complaining, criticisms are all harmful. But gossip is really a particularly deadly sin because it really has the capacity to hurt someone else so deeply. It has destroyed more people tarnished more reputations, broken more friendships, and split more churches than any sin that you can even think of. It's quickly told, it's quickly heard, and quickly spread. But most of all, it's quickly believed. People will confess to theft and adultery and even murder, but not many people will confess to gossip. Proverbs chapter 15, a couple last scriptures here before I close. And another poem from a man named Henry Lester of the Darnell Corporation. While you're turning to Proverbs 15, he said, "In the course of your conversation each and every day, think twice. Try to be careful of what you have to say. Your remarks may be picked up by someone's listening ear. You may be surprised at what some people think they hear. Things that you innocently say or try to portray can be changed and greatly exaggerated along the way. Many stories change for the worse as they are retold, so try to keep any questionable remarks on hold. May I give you all some very sound advice? When you speak of others, say something nice. Try to say good things regardless of who is around. If you don't have anything to say, don't utter a sound. You may find that an innocent remark in the end may lose you a close and valued friend." Proverbs 15 verse 2 says, "The tongue of the wise uses knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools pours out foolishness." And one other here is in Proverbs 18 and verse 21. Proverbs 18:21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those that love it will eat the fruit thereof." It's so interesting. It does, in a sense, take us back to the two trees, doesn't it? There's the tree of life. The speaking, the conversation that benefits, that's edifying, that's uplifting, that's just, that's good, that's true, that's faithful. And then there's the other one. The one of gossip, the one that represents Satan, the one that stands for him and the slander and the malice and the gossip and everything that befits him. And understanding it, if we fall in that trap, we end up being his allies. There are times when we may have to speak about someone who is not present. Those times are very few and should be approached very cautiously. So may God help us to always speak of that person or of any person in the best possible light. May God put a watch on all of our tongues so that we may avoid the sin of gossip.